you know, I would be very aware for people thinking, especially, you know, women who are maybe a little bit less risk tolerant and a little bit more hesitant around this space, thinking that, oh, everybody else has it all figured out and this it's this big black box. When really most of the people that try to get fancy, that try to look like geniuses, are just losing money behind the scenes. And
welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. My guest today is Kristen Watch. She's a personal financial coach and the owner of Women's Money Mastery. And today she's going to talk to us about all sorts of different types of investing and all of that good stuff around money to make our life better later on in life and right now. And Kristen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's really good to be here.
Thank you. So I kind of like to begin with just tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Canadian. I'm originally from London, Ontario, and I spent many years climbing the corporate ladder as a commodities trader in Calgary, Alberta, and I realized after a number of years of doing that I was making great money and also spending all of it, and I racked up a huge amount of debt. You know, I had, you know, a very expensive MBA to afford, and I basically, you know, after years of checking all the boxes and doing all the things that, you know, you think you should do, that society tells you is like the right thing to do, I was living a life that was like deeply unfulfilling and, you know, just frittering all my money away and, you know, feeding my drinking problem and my spending addiction, and ended up getting laid off, which was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, although at the time it didn't feel like it. Started my career as an entrepreneur, started, you know, really veering into the realm of coaching and coaching a lot of women and hearing them say, I was doing a lot of business strategy and hearing them say the same thing again and again. I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good with money. It's just not my thing. And these smart, successful women having all of these limiting beliefs around money, it was crazy to me. And, you know, it was through my own inner journey, my own personal work, when I really started understanding my own mind and my beliefs and how that was driving all of my decisions and, you know, leading to the toxic patterns I had around money and everything else. That was when things began to shift for me, and I paid off all my debt and built, you know, multiple successful businesses. And the coaching that I now do with women is really teaching them to do the same, like understanding how their beliefs create their entire reality and how those beliefs shape everything you want in life, money and otherwise, and then understanding really how to make more money, how to use money powerfully, and how to invest for the long term in a really, you know, confident, expansive and easy way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think it's a similar story with the limiting beliefs, right? Like, that's not for me. That's other people and this kind of thing. And it's just simply not true, right?
Yeah. We have no idea. You know, I remember I did a Tony Robbins event years ago, and I still, one of his lines stuck with me so permanently. It's like, the problem with our beliefs is that we believe them. So we go through life just believing that things are true, believing it's true. I'll never earn seven figures because no one in my family ever has, or believing, you know, it's true that I just suck at numbers, which is crazy, right? Because numbers are just a skill like everything else. It's like riding a bike. Like, of course you suck when you've never really done it before. You spend a lot of time avoiding bicycles. Same with driving a car. And so it's like all of these things contribute to us, you know, avoiding certain things, or, you know, leaning into certain things, being good at certain things or not. And they really drive what you're able to create in the world.
Yeah, I agree. My story is similar, like in the past with the limiting beliefs and drinking and all this kind of stuff, getting the money just in one hand, out the other. And I just recently uncovered a limiting belief is that, not that I'm like from a lack or scarcity mindset of I don't have money. And mine was, I just don't give a shit about money. And so it would come in one hand and go out the other. Yeah. And I think Tony Robbins, I heard him say, I was at an event and he said, how can you take the worst thing that ever happened to you and make it the best thing? And I was just like, whoa, I know mine, right? And I was just, that one sentence changed my entire life.
Yeah, so powerful. And that's super common, right? Like when we're, you know, one of the beliefs that I had when I was working my corporate career is I can always just make more money. And so I was not spending intentionally. I wasn't intentional about saving it. I was investing very haphazardly. And so, you know, it seems like having the belief of I can always make more money sounds good, right? Or I don't care about money, right? Like, I'm not focused on money. A lot of people tell themselves that. But it's like, if you told your partner, you know, your wife or your husband, that you didn't care about them or that you weren't focused on them, like, would you have a really powerful, you know, successful relationship? No. Well, your money is the same, right? Like, you have to give it intention. You have to, you know, guide it and direct it and give it love and like appreciate what's coming in and also have awareness of what's going out, right? And so that's, I think that's a much more healthy and grounded relationship to money than, oh, I don't have to I don't have to look at it. It's, you know, it'll always be there, and then just like spending it all away.
Yeah. There's a guy named Ken Honda, and he kind of talks about what you're saying about the intention around money, where when you get a bill and you have to pay it, instead of being mad about it, just be thankful and just almost like that you're providing for someone else. And it's just a cycle, right? It keeps going around and coming, but instead of getting mad that that bill is coming in and you're spending the money, think about the exact same event, but now, oh, I'm putting food on someone's table because that guy provided a service or whatever.
Totally. Well, like gratitude for the fact that you have money to pay the bill. Like, there have been times in my life where I had bills, and I remember doing mental gymnastics around which bills I could afford to delay the longest before somebody would, you know, follow up with me again and again, because I didn't have money. I didn't have enough money to cover all my outgoings. And like, there have been times as an entrepreneur where that's happened, you know, years ago. And so having gratitude for the fact that you have more than enough to pay all the bills, but also the only reason you would be upset about a bill is if you believe that more money wasn't coming, right? Like, if you really trusted your ability to create and attract and make more money, the bill wouldn't matter because there's always more behind it. And so that's, you know, being upset or, you know, not just in scarcity, but like having a problem with expenses is, you know, it's societal programming, right? So it's not a problem with you or your mind, but just recognize that that's really where it's coming from.
Yeah, I love that. That's the thing too, right? If you're not looking at it and you're not aware of it. And I have one friend and she gets so mad. Like, she does this like tax time, right? And she gets so mad leading up to it, like for weeks and weeks, and she's just stressed out. But I'm like, you're getting emotional about it. It's just is what it is. It's happening and you do it, and money doesn't have emotions and you're putting it onto it.
Yeah, it's funny because I had this conversation with my accountant this year. Like, we have a very, very big tax bill, like more than we've ever had before. And he's like, Kristen, this is what happens when you make a lot of money. Like, and it's fascinating because I think that that's especially around taxes, right? Like, first of all, preparing for the tax bill and knowing that you're putting money aside is really helpful so that you're not blindsided. But knowing like the only reason you have a lot of taxes to pay are because you made a lot of money. So if you didn't have any taxes, it would just be a sign that you're not earning anything, which like, is that better? No, absolutely not.
I love it. And so you said earlier, like, about if you're treating your partner that way. And so I have a question between like investing. We're going to talk about investing, but like, obviously it's going to be different if you're single or if you're married or if you have a partner. And so can you speak to either of those?
Around investing specifically or handling money in partnership?
It could be both, but I think we'll move towards investing. So however you want to take it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to partnership, there's no, and in the work that I teach, I don't ever teach anyone, you have to do this or you have to do that. Like, you have to spend this amount on your home and this amount on clothes. I truly believe that when you have the right tools, right, and you have visibility on where all your money is going, maybe you have, you know, 20 grand to allocate this month, you just get to choose where that goes, right? And part of that is going to your today expenses. And, you know, part of that is going to your dreams. Part of that's going to your investments. And in part of what happens in that process, when you have a partner, you guys just get to get into alignment on what that looks like. And so I think really, it's really important to involve your partner, like to have like a shared vision for your life, right? Because it's never about the number. Like, we're not here to, you know, put $3 million in a bank just to sit on the number and be satisfied. Like, we're not turned on by numbers. At least, you know, most women aren't. It's like, what does that $3 million allow you to create in your life? And for everyone, that's going to be so different. And so I think, you know, outside of the money and the numbers, it's really important to get into alignment with your partner on like, what life do we want? And this should be a conversation you're having. Like, I have this kind of conversation on first dates. Like, this should be a conversation that you have openly and honestly about like, where are we going, right? Like, if I want to live my dream life on the beach in Costa Rica and surf every day, and big cities give me anxiety, well, dating someone that lives in New York where there's constant commotion, and I've done this before, is not going to be supportive, right? Because we just want different things. Neither one is good or bad. But like, so it doesn't matter how much money we have if what we desire from life and from the money that we do have is out of alignment. So having those conversations with your partner really early on is important. And then I love, like, whether you have a partner or not, having a weekly hot money date. So like sitting down with your numbers and like connecting to that vision and making sure the numbers make sense and allocating your money. So it's like, I can see my money growing through investments and my savings toward our dreams. And that can be like a really cool ritual. It's not like a chore for you and your partner. It's like a really fun ritual where it's like date night. You get dressed up and you like sit down with your, you know, your spreadsheets or whatever it looks like. And it actually feels really fun and really good because you can see your dreams getting closer and actually like being part of your reality. I think one of the biggest things that holds a lot of people back around money is we have shame around talking about it, right? It's this like really taboo subject. It's really weird. It's like no one discloses their income or their net worth. It's like, why not just be open about all of it so that you can, you know, decide with intention the life that you want to live and really build that, like, get clear with your partner on how you're going to spend money and how you're going to make money decisions. And I think that's really important too. So that's true for investing or, you know, just how your day-to-day spending, right? And so whether you have shared money or not, I think is a really a personal preference, but you can do both of those things, whether you have shared money or joint bank accounts or kids or no kids, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And you said it, intention, right? It's that money day thing. I never thought of that. That's a great idea because you're pulling your dreams closer. You're making it real. You're getting in action instead of just in your mind. And such a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I think most people live on autopilot. They're just like, they're not even clear what they want out of life. And they're just coasting along, hoping that something good happens. It's like, well, get clear on like, what do you really desire? And I think this is why it's so powerful to really step outside of the box of like checking the boxes that society puts in front of you. It's like, get a good job, you know, make like, I can't tell you how many friends I have that have climbed the corporate ladder and make more money than anybody I know and are deeply unhappy, right? It's like, is climbing the corporate ladder, getting that job, you know, having a house in the suburbs, you know, with 2.5 kids, is that your dream? Like, do you even want kids? Do you want to live there? Would you rather live somewhere else? Like all of those things, like you get to decide, like choose.
Yeah, that's so true. I love this conversation. There's a lot of like actual life coaching in what you're saying here, even though it's money and business. But I know I said I want to go to investments, so I do. But while we're with this dream, this is the phase four podcast, and phase four in the six phase meditation by Vishen Lakhiani is all about creating your future 3 years out. So where is Kristen 3 years from today?
That is such a good question. I imagine my life looking very similar to what it does now. You know, I live on the beaches in Costa Rica. I truly do live, and I feel so grateful because the place that I live is where people spend, you know, they save up all year and they have a week vacation and they come here and it's like the highlight of their year. And that's where I get to live every day. And that didn't happen by accident, right? And it's actually not that hard to create. I just, you know, decided I wanted to live here and I made it happen and I jumped on a plane and I moved my life. And so I think where I see myself in a couple of years is really living a very similar life, surfing all the time, connected to really beautiful community here, you know. My business will be, you know, even more global than it is right now, scaling my impact to help even more and more women. There are definitely kids in that three-year vision. There's, you know, a marriage and, you know, a beautiful, you know, expansive life. But very similar to, you know, what I'm doing now, probably a little bit more travel.
That's a beautiful answer. I love it. That's mine. It's like, I keep going down the same road and then pulling that dream, the big long-term dream, closer and closer. And so the reason I asked that was just, we were talking about the dream, that money date. And then I was like, that, what is it? Right? Because if you have a dream, if you don't have a dream, you kind of said about some people, they just don't never think about it. Maybe no one ever asked them. I find all the time that people are like, when I ask them, what's your dream? They're like, huh? They look at me weird. Like, because nobody's ever asked them. They've never thought about it. Right. But the deal is that if you think about that dream, if you hold that vision, especially if you're someone who meditates or if you spend time just quiet, that the more you revisit that same dream, more details come in and the more you're pulling it towards you. And then what happens? 3 years is a good number, because I think it was Bill Gates who said something like, we overestimate what we can get done in 10 years and we underestimate what we can get done in one. And so 3 years is a good number out. But what happens is you collapse that timeline by pulling those dreams. Every time you visit it, you pull it closer and closer. So I digress. And I would love to know, in the year 2024, obviously it's personal for each individual, but what are some maybe good investments? And before we even get there, I think like something like, there's an election coming, right? So we all know the markets aren't the best, but also that the next day after the election, that it's going to go through the roof. And these kind of things play in my mind all the time. So what kind of advice would you have for anybody who's either seasoned or just starting out?
Yeah, my answer is probably not going to be what you're looking for. But, you know, one of the biggest, I think, misconceptions when it comes to investing that most people don't realize is there's a difference between trading, you know, actively trading, which is you're watching the market every day, you're selling and buying very frequently. You're trying to predict when the market is at a high, when it's at a low, when certain investments are going up or down, you know, what's going to be the next Amazon. And then there's investing, which is really choosing investments, whether that's particular companies or, you know, like a basket of investments, which I can speak a little bit into, that are just good investments that you are confident are going to go up substantially in the long run, right? They're growing companies. They have a really solid, you know, really solid financials, really solid footing. And so what I teach is not day trading. You know, I have done that, right? And I was a trader as my career, right? Like I remember, you know, there was like, we would have like, I was structuring multi-million dollar deals and I would have minutes to put a deal together before the market closed on me, like before the market would move and the deal like just doesn't make financial sense. That is very stressful. And it's also very unpredictable. And so I think most people, you know, in my corporate career doing that was a little bit different than what a regular everyday investor could do on their own. But most people, when they try to pick the winners, when they try to move in and out of positions, when they try to actively trade, almost everybody loses money. And it's fascinating because I can't tell you how many, you know, particularly men, because it's mostly men in trading that talk about, you know, the investments they've made, talk about their crypto purchases, all of these things. And you dig a little deeper with a few questions and you realize they're actually just losing money. And you wouldn't know that if you didn't, you know, you weren't kind of aware of it. But, you know, I would be very aware for people thinking, especially, you know, women who are maybe a little bit less risk tolerant and a little bit more hesitant around this space, thinking that, oh, everybody else has it all figured out and it's this big black box. When really most of the people that try to get fancy, that try to look like geniuses, are just losing money behind the scenes. And actually 85% of professional money managers also fail to beat the average, which means that average of where the market goes long term, which just like tends to go up in the long run over more than 10 year period, like professional money managers, so that, you know, investment advisors that work for the bank, like all of those people, they actually underperform what you could just do by yourself on average. And so these are stats that nobody talks about, that no one really knows. They think professionals are just great. Well, there's a reason that it's hard for professionals. It's because no one, what you just talked about around the election and what's happening, or like COVID hitting, nobody knows. And what you'll find, if you actually like watch economists talk about things, or, you know, investment professionals, they'll always just really explain retroactively why they think things happened. It's very hard to actually predict the future, because the election's coming, sure, and everyone has their best guess about what it's going to do to the market. And then it does the complete opposite. And everyone's like, oh my God, why did that happen? Oh, here are all the reasons. So it's like, even with COVID, right? COVID hit and the market dropped by like 30% very, very rapidly. Well, it went on later that year to climb to all-time highs. No one ever could have predicted that. And so what I would offer to everyone that's like really looking at investing for themselves is, what's way easier than trying to time the market or predict when it's going up or down is to just invest consistently over time and trust that your return is there. And versus doing it with an advisor where they're actually taking like a very significant fee, which can add up to like half of your retirement portfolio, which is a little bit crazy. And so consistent investing, you know, take whatever amount you want every week or every month and just be putting it into the investments that you choose that you're confident are going to be going up in the long run.
I love it. So trading is now, investing is long-term future. 10 years, you said, is you would use that. I saw you in a video the other day about 10 years. 10 years seems to be a good timeline to, I don't want to say guarantee, but like you know, okay, if I start here in 10 years, I should be here. And does ETFs come into that? Because you kind of touched on that a bit.
Yeah. So 10 years is, if you think about, and 10 years isn't where you should stop investing. It's literally the way that compound interest works is the longer you can leave your money in, the more your money does all the heavy lifting. So think about if you think about a graph, think about a straight line versus a hockey stick, right? That the hockey stick graph where it's like exponentially growing in the later years, that's what you're wanting. And that's what, I won't get into the math. You don't even need to understand it. But what it means is that those later years, your money is growing significantly because it just has so much interest snowballing. And so the longer you can leave your investments in, the better. And that just means that whatever age you're at, the sooner you get started, the better. Like don't, you know, berate yourself for not having started 10 years ago. I think that's a really common thing. Like the best time to start is now. And when it comes to that 10-year thing, the 10-year timeframe is really, we talk about the market often, like the stats show that the market tends to go up over a 10-year time period or more, you can expect a 7% a year return. And so the reason we can't say that, like if you're only going to invest for 5 years, we can't say you're for sure going to average a 7-year return, because it might be, you know, a down 5 years, or it might be, you know, the reality is that 1 year goes up 23% and the next year it might be down 10. The next year you might catch it over, if you shorten the time period, right? If you only invest for a year, you might catch it on a down year. You could catch it on a, you know, an up by 40% year. But that's why over a longer time period, we can smooth that average. And so we know it's more consistent. And that's why, you know, back to what I was saying about trading versus investing, over a longer period of time, consistent, predictable returns are more easier to access versus trading, which is unpredictable in the short term.
Thank you for clarifying that. I wonder about risk. You sound like you don't like risk. And I hear a lot of people, there's a guy, I forget his channel, but it's a really cool channel. And he asks people about money. What do you always like? What do you think? What's your biggest regret kind of? And everybody always says like, I didn't take bigger risks. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't say I'm risk averse. I'm a big risk taker and I love risk, but I also love being smart and I love making money. And so I think what one thing I see when it comes to investing a lot is not that you shouldn't take on risk. I think risk can often give you a great return. But what I see, for example, you know, it's one thing to have a really solid portfolio that you know is returning you consistent. You know, it's a very boring return when you are just getting stuff consistently, right? Like it's, you know, it's growing over time. It's not fluctuating a lot. It's not really volatile. So I think a big chunk of your portfolio should be in investments that you trust are going to grow over time, versus and having, you know, maybe a percentage of your portfolio in a lot higher risk investments, right? And this is a reflection of your risk tolerance and your age, but risk is not a bad thing, right? What I see a lot of people doing, and this comes up a lot in crypto, for example, people will have literally 100% of their investment portfolio in crypto. Well, crypto crashes and they lose like literally their entire retirement. And so there's a difference between taking on risk for the, you know, possible benefit and return and risking everything you have in a way that actually sacrifices, you know, your certainty and your stability. And so what I think is appropriate when it comes to risk is really calculated risk with a section of the amount that you're investing versus putting all your eggs in one basket, hoping for one big payoff. It's like going to the casino and putting all your money on black. It's like, yeah, maybe that pays off, but would you bet your, you know, your child's, you know, education fund on that, or your retirement, right? Like, well, maybe not. Maybe you do that with, you know, $100 here and there to like have some fun and maybe get a payout, but not, you know, not everything you have.
Not a fan of crypto?
I am a fan of crypto. I have a crypto portfolio for sure, but it's probably 5% of my portfolio.
Beautiful. And so now what's happened with crypto recently? Is it BlackRock? I don't know. Whole crypto's changing now. What does that look like for people who are about to start investing or anything? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know, with crypto, so crypto has recovered significantly recently, right? I think crypto is still a big black box. Like there's still a lot of risk. I think there are a lot of, it's becoming more clear that institutional investors are able to invest there, which, you know, will flood a whole bunch more money into it. So I think that the long term, in my view, the long term projection for crypto does look very, you know, very appealing, right? I think there's always opportunity. Right now, most crypto is at an all-time high. So again, back to that whole thing, it's not about predicting is it going to go up or down from here. It's about, do you believe in, and not just crypto as a whole, because there are many different cryptocurrencies, right? It's like, do you believe that this is going to be a really great long-term investment for me? And here's why I believe that, right? Like, I believe in the space, I believe in the possibility, the potential, I believe in this particular company and these founders and so really doing your due diligence around that versus trying to say, is Bitcoin going to be double what it is on Thursday? It's like, nobody knows.
I love it. So I just heard there was a bit like, almost think about where your values lie and try to align it with that. And so this really comes into play with companies that pay dividends, right? You're using certain products in your daily life already. So what do you think about that? Like investing, let's say Procter & Gamble, we're using the toothpaste and all the things already.
Yeah.
Money back?
I think that's a big thing for women. It's a question I get asked a lot is, how do I make investments that are, you know, aligned with my values? Because it's not just about making money anymore. I think society has really shifted to a place where we want to put our dollars behind things that matter to us, things that we care about. And so if, for example, you're not in support of the oil and gas industry, well, don't invest your money in Exxon, right? And so I think that it's really, there are so many, you know, there are funds out there that you can look at that are like ethical, sustainable funds or green funds where it's like, or even just specific companies, it's like, I really believe in Shopify and what they're doing in the world and their, you know, their ethos. And I want to put my money behind that. And so whether it's Procter & Gamble and you just believe in their products, or it's, you know, it's companies that are, you know, have a really solid, you know, values standpoint that aligns with you, you get to choose where you put your money and you get to not allocate it to other places. And so it's a really easy thing to do when you're just deciding where it all goes.
All right. Now let's turn to you more specifically, working with you. What does it look like? Is it one-on-one? Do you have groups? What would it look like for someone?
Yeah, I don't do any one-on-one work. One of the big reasons is that doing money work inside of a group container is so powerful because we have so much shame around money, right? Around talking about money, around our stories about money. And so really understanding and hearing other women and other women's perspectives on what they're moving through with money and what they're creating, and even just the shame around, you know, I've just had, you know, our biggest financial year ever. And it's like, who can I share that with? Because I'm afraid of all my, you know, my friends and family might judge me, right? So some of those conversations I think are really important, especially for women. My group program that I run is Women's Money Mastery. So it takes women down really four pillars that everyone needs to create financial freedom, to create wealth, clearing money blocks. Like, what are all the stories that are in your head around money, around yourself, around, you know, your finances and wealth that are getting in the way of you building the life you want? And then earning efficiently, what is it going to take to get to that next level? And so it's, you know, really, what is the 10x move for you? The big bold moves that we do business strategy and execution. It's like, what is actually going to, like, 2 to 5x your business versus just like 5 or 10% growth? And then spending with intention, you know, where is all your money going? Everything we've been taught historically about budgeting just doesn't work. There's a reason everyone feels like it's a chore and everyone avoids an Excel sheet because it just doesn't work. And so what I teach in my program is really a backward way to budget that feels super expansive. It's like a choose your own adventure, and it just allows you to be in control of where all your money goes. And then creating wealth through investment. So, you know, how you become, whether you have an investment portfolio now and maybe you have investments going, you don't really understand what you're invested in. Maybe you're using a financial advisor. You're like, I don't even know what they do. Or you've never started before. I give you everything from the ground up to really, you know, I love that we've been able to have this conversation about investments. And this really only scratches the surface because there's only so much we can share on a podcast without getting into, you know, how does it work? Here's what the accounts are. Here are the investment options. Here's how you do it. Like, I guide women through every piece of that. And also, it's really, really powerful to have a space where you can ask the questions you think are dumb. Like, I can't tell you how many times people are like, I know this is a dumb question, but it's like, I'm the person that you can ask dumb questions to because your financial advisor probably makes you feel like an idiot because he thinks you should know. Well, it's like, no, like, of course you don't know the answer to a question you've never had answered before, a question you've never asked. And so, yeah, really being in a place where you're earning great money, you're not overworking for it and your money is growing for you really sets you up for retirement in a powerful, powerful way.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's that container that you set up, that's like a safe container where people can see that they're not alone, that it, not even just the silly questions that they think, but just, oh, you feel like that too? I thought that was, I was the only one. And in a group environment, it just, it's so powerful. I think you said shame, right? That seems to be a most, like a most common story, right? And it probably comes from like times, right? Like generationally, things have changed recently, but before the Bible, right? Money's the root of all evil and these kind of things. And also, like, before our generation, everybody was living in lack forever, right? Like, there's 12 kids, there's no food, like, no jobs. What are we going to do? Recession, depression, war. So shame, definitely, it makes sense. But I would be curious, what are, like, the same, you must see similar stories and, like, the same kind of patterns. And so what are some of those?
Yeah, it's fascinating because money shame, right? We have shame around not earning enough. And then we also have shame around earning too much, right? Especially for women, because I think men have a lot more space, I think, in society. It's like to be ambitious, to grow, and you're really rewarded and acknowledged for it. Whereas women are like, I shouldn't earn too much because maybe I will be intimidating to men, or maybe, you know, my friends will judge me. So there's the realities of like how that comes up for women. I think a lot of women, especially women earning at a high level and desiring to earn at a high level, really run into that upper limit around, will I be judged? Will I lose friends? Will I lose love? And so the shame exists in a lot of ways, in a lot of places. And it just is like any other belief, right? You just get to really unpack what's there and acknowledge and really shift your beliefs to a more powerful space. It's like doing the work to recognize that, yeah, like, there are going to be some people who hate that you make more money, right? There are going to be some friends that maybe aren't on board. And there are also going to be other friends that are super inspired by what you're doing, what you're creating, and what you're stepping into. There are going to be, you know, family members that are feeling so loved and supported by your generosity, because that's one, you know, big thing we do with money. It's like the money, the shame that we think we have to feel about money really doesn't have to exist if we change our beliefs about it.
I love it, man. I'm all about the beliefs, because where I was, where I am, and it looks so different. And it's like you're carrying them around forever and they feel like they're a part of you, and they're not. You can just let go of them at any time.
Totally, totally.
And so as we begin to wind down, if this episode resonates with you, please give us a like, subscribe, share, follow. No hard sell. But definitely reach out to Kristen. And if you're just listening on audio, she's just oozing light and positive energy. So this is obviously the conversation. You can tell that this is probably someone you're going to want to connect with if you're looking to expand your reach with your own money, get in a better relationship with your own money. And I kind of like to finish off before I ask my final questions with just letting the guests kind of take it where they want. A story of hope, inspiration, some tools, some tips, anything you want. You have a podcast I would love you to talk about also.
So my podcast is The Wealth Equation. It's beautiful. It takes you behind the scenes of some really, you know, multi-six, seven, eight-figure earners and what it's really taken for them to create wealth. And then some of the most powerful, punchy, you know, money and wealth education that I put out in solo episodes. So definitely tune into that. I would love to hear from all of you guys. I think, you know, the biggest message for me that I always want to leave people with is literally anything is possible. You know, we live our whole lives inside the construct of what we believe to be realistic, of what we believe to be possible based on our upbringing or, you know, what society tells us. And it's like, if COVID has taught us anything, one thing we should really be taking away from it is like literally anything is possible, guys. Like the entire world shut down and moved all of their businesses online, like literally overnight. Like if that can happen, you can make the fucking money you want. You can do anything. Like you can create the life that you really desire, and you can do it probably a lot more easily than you think. And, you know, whether you came from money or not, whether you, you know, have created something before, like that life, that business, that portfolio, that net worth, like that relationship, like that is all available for you.
I love this. And then my final question is, how can people reach you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me probably on Instagram is the best place. It's kristenwonch.xox, KristenWonch. And let me know what landed for you from the episode. I'd love to hear from you guys.
Kristen, I'm so grateful for your time today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for your beautiful questions.